Welcome, Petra, to Frankfurter Regulierungs Conference. Petra, since you became chairperson of IOPA in 2021, you have led the authority through a time of major change. What have been your biggest personal challenges and what priorities have guided your work so far?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me, and it really is my pleasure to be here today. And thanks for the question. Yeah, what were the challenges? I have to go back 4 years when I started here in Frankfurt during Corona times. And a personal challenge, was the move to Frankfurt. But I can say that that now is really an opportunity and something that is really enjoyable. It's really nice to work and live here in a city that I always say is on the one side very international and global, and at the same time still has the warmth and the size of a smaller city where you can live really comfortable. And I really enjoy that. Coming to IOPA, of course, also can be a challenge in the sense that you're no longer a national supervisory authority. You are the European authority working with all. But that for me has always been the perk of the job, what makes the job nice and is making the job nice till today.
Perfect. Today, we are going to talk about regulation and competitiveness in the European context. IOPA aims to protect consumers and ensure financial stability. How do you balance these goals with the need to support innovation and competitiveness, especially with new rules like DORA and the AI Act?
Well, that is a key question that we are asking ourselves today. Clearly, the European Union is, with the new Commission, striving for a more competitive a savings and investment union, and being part of that, IOPA also wants to contribute to that. Meanwhile, competitiveness is not our mandate. Our mandate is financial stability and consumer protection, meaning that if you buy an insurance, you know you buy a product that will definitely serve you, but also that will pay out when you need to. And in the same way, a pension product or another product for retirement or to protect your house, you get what you think you got. I think it's important you buy a good product, but also that once you need it, it's actually there. That's essential. And meanwhile, financial stability as a sector, of course, also is very important, but also not a given in a very uncertain time. And so all that together, how do you mix that with a savings and investment union? I would say that is not a contradiction. I think that a savings and investment union where people save more for retirement through products different than bank accounts can support not only the economy, but very much also citizens in the European Union that currently could face too little income during retirement.
Absolutely. One question to your regulatory developments in Europe. In your opinion, are current regulatory developments in Europe going in the right direction? Or are there areas where you think changes are needed to better support a competitive insurance sector?
I think the big thinking today is what we can do to simplify, streamline the regulation that we have. And not produce a lot more. I think on the a lot more, I think we all agree on that. Stakeholders, supervisors. There's been a lot of new legislation in the last commission. IOPA in that time received 10 new mandates. That is a lot to implement for supervisors as well as for the industry. In fact, what we're doing is we're looking at that again ourselves, but also the European Commission is looking at several of those acts and asking the question, do we really need all to achieve in the end that goal of financial stability and consumer protection? And what we see is that the outcome is that indeed simplification and burden reduction is possible, mm-hmm. particularly when it comes to reporting requirements and frequency of what you need to do. I personally believe that we can still have really prudent supervision and good conduct supervision with a bit less. And the only thing I always say is it can't be too little. And so the only thing I see is that in the debate about the Solvency II framework, which is really the basis of stability, there we need to be conscious that simplification and burden reduction is great, but we should not deregulate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When we talk about competitiveness in the insurance today, is it still mainly about capital requirements or are other factors becoming more important from a European perspective?
I would say that capital requirements, and then I link it immediately to the robustness of the industry, to be able to deal with shocks, to be able to deal in an uncertain world with shocks, is still the basis of importance of having a stable industry. But beyond that, what we see is that conduct supervision, so how products are sold to consumers, is becoming more and more important, and for good reason. If you believe in a competitive Europe, if you believe in the single market, and I do, then I think that European insurers and the industry is really well equipped to really benefit from the single market. Insurers need one license to sell in 27 member states, and then from that skill also operate in the world. And we have some really good examples of some European groups, insurance groups that operate globally and are key players in the global insurance world. Yet what we see in the EU is that if you have one license and you operate in 27 countries, yes, for prudential supervision, you have solvency too, but for conduct supervision, you are confronted with a lot of different rules or different supervisory practices, depending on where you are active within the EU. And what we also see is that for several products, and particularly for pension savings, both consumers look national, but also member states like it national, which has an impact on the ability to scale for these companies, but also for these products. And here I think we miss an opportunity to really use the wealth that we have in the EU, because we have it in a way that is much more supporting our economy, but also enhancing our competitiveness.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about DORA, artificial intelligence, digitalization. Digital transformation brings both opportunities, a new risk for insurance. What does EIOPA expect from the industry when it comes to implementing DORA, for example, and how do you help insurers become more digital resilient?
DORA is a really interesting act because it does something new. It asks the three ESAs, so myself, EIOPA, but together with my sisters, the European Banking Authority and the European Securities and Markets Authority, so EBA and ESMA, to jointly do oversight on the critical third parties. And what is interesting here is that until now, to supervise operational resilience, including cyber resilience, we had to go to the licensed entity, so a bank or an insurer, and then you ask them, where are your IT services? And then maybe they've outsourced that, and maybe that party has outsourced it as well, and then outsourced again. But all in all, sometimes we see 11 steps till you get to the final point for outsourcing. And it's often in the same entities, which we call critical third parties for our financial industry. And this is how we got there to check on that. What DORA does is it says, no, stop doing that through the license. Just go through the front door of the critical third party. And I think that in itself is very, very, very welcome. And so the three ACEs are currently working on joint supervisory teams. We call them joint examination teams to look at the critical third party's resilience when it comes to keeping our industry safe. Meanwhile, DORA also looks at banks and insurers and pension funds and expects them to be IT and cyber resilient, and there are rules for that. But these rules were already there, and so they're not additional new rules. In fact, once DORA was implemented, EIOPA deleted the guidelines on IT and operational risk that we had out there because they were no longer necessary because we had DORA. Here, yeah, help. What we do is we share that information, we challenge, we supervise, etc. And the final benefit of DORA is, and I think this is also related again to burden reduction, is streamlining of all the reporting requirements when it comes to cyber events. DORA is a lex specialis, and that means it overrules all the other legislation, and this is how we report. So it should be simpler for industry to do. It should not be new for our industry to do. It's definitely new for the critical third parties.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Maybe can I add one more thing?
Yeah, please.
What is new is now that we have to identify who are the critical third parties, our industry, banks, everyone had to report, what are you using? Where are you outsourcing to? And which parties? Because then we sum it up and we get an overview of where the concentration is in this field for our industry. Now, that was an effort. And I just want to say that it was an effort. It was a big effort. But I really appreciate that companies did it for the simple reason that this is how you contribute to the resilience of Europe. It's by helping us understand which critical four parties need our attention.
Absolutely. Thank you. And the EU-IA Act sets new rules for artificial intelligence. And how do you think this will affect the insurance sector? And where do you see the biggest opportunities and challenges?
Yeah, first of all, I think AI brings a lot of opportunities, and we see that already the uptake of use in the insurance sector of AI is enormous. 50% is using it, 30% thinks they will use it within the next 3 years. On the non-life side, life a little bit less, but it's happening as we speak, not only anymore in the back office for efficiency reasons, but definitely also in underwriting, in claims handling. And what we've seen in our consumer survey is that consumers actually much appreciate in the claims handling the use of AI, because you have an accident, you send a picture, the AI assesses the picture, you get a payout. It goes very quick. So those are the benefits. There are also the risks, of course. You need to know what you do. You need to understand what the AI is working on. Does it exclude people? Does it discriminate? Is it unfair? Can I explain what the AI did? This is easy to ask, but it's sometimes not easy to do. And so here comes the AI Act. And then we say it introduces new rules. But my question is, does it do that really? And why is that? The AI Act is an act that is applying to the whole economy in the European Union. And so it also applies to companies that have never been supervised before. To give you an example, in EIOPA, we use AI. We are now also under the AI Act. We need to be compliant with the AI Act. We will be super. We didn't have that before, so we are putting things in place. But if you take the insurance industry that is already heavily supervised, like the pensions, like the banks, but definitely for insurance, that is my mandate, they already were supervised and they already needed to make sure that they don't discriminate, that they are fair, that they have risk management, etc. So what we are saying is when it comes to the AI Act, that in itself should not introduce a lot of new requirements for insurers to implement. Mm-hmm. What it does do is that it helps, and we hope to also help with more guidance as EIOPA, to talk with each other how you deal with it. Because we don't think you need a whole lot of new legislation, but I do think you need to have a lot more exchange between supervisors, but also supervisor industry. How do we deal with this? I mean, what am I looking at? And you can't solve that with just adding a new rule. It's anyway, the developments go too fast. But you will solve it by just exchanging. Like I now have an insurer that does this. How do you look at that? And this is what we are publishing as EIOPA, but also with the AI board for those who are considered high risk. And that's maybe my final comment. It's good to keep in mind that the AI Act forbids certain use of AI, face recognition on the streets, etc. It also allows AI, and you can just use it as long as you say you're talking to a chatbot, and then it's fine. And then there is a group that is identified as high risk that needs to make that extra effort. And there it's health and life insurance that are under there. All other insurers are, yeah, not in there, but they are still under solvency too. And so they still will have to comply with this explainability and fairness, etc.
Absolutely. It's very interesting. But let's go a little bit further to social responsibility, for example, and closing climate and protection gaps is a key focus for EIOPA. What practical steps are you taking to encourage sustainable innovation and help the sector deal with the climate risk, for example?
Yeah. So a climate risk is up, and we see it when we look outside, flooding, hailstorms, heat, forest fires, it's there. And what we also see is that only 25% of the damages that is done is insured. And what we then see in addition is that damages are going up. So if you look at the zeros, we saw that about 15 billion of damages hits Europe because of NatCat risk, natural catastrophe risk. That went up in the tens to 18 billion. But now in the 20s, we're at 40 billion.
Wow.
So it is an exponential growth almost of the damages. And I don't think that that trend will go down. And I do think we will stay up in high numbers. That means that ad hoc solutions where the government steps in after a disaster and says, we will pay for it, might not be the optimal way to deal with it. Now, when I say governments, you also reach politics. And of course, politics these days and sustainability, they do raise questions. But what I always say is this is not about politics. This is about pragmatism. Mm-hmm. If you look outside of the window, you see what is happening, there are damages and they will impact property. They will impact consumers, businesses, and you need to get organized. Getting organized is then where we start to think along as IOPA. And we do several things, but I want to highlight a few. First of all, we are working on ideas to have a label for consumers that actually identifies what is the risk of my property, of my house, of my business to these risks, and what can I do about it? It has to do with activating awareness and also action and getting insurance. The second thing we do is discuss with insurers if they can not just underwrite, but do impact underwriting. And that means that they say, I can insure this property, but I do need you to take some measures. Mm-hmm. That's completely normal in insurance, I would say. I mean, if you want cyber insurance, you need to install the firewall. And as a Dutch person, I always say, if I want my bicycle insured, I need to buy very good locks on it. So I think this impact underwriting is also, and so the focus there is mitigation, adaptation, supporting consumers, mm-hmm. and talking to city councils, how they can look at building codes, where do you license, etc. We also look at the capacity in the insurance market and what they can do. And finally, we do work together with the ECB on reports, and we've now two reports out, on also public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. The first report is interesting to read because this is where we really introduce this step approach where the whole, everyone needs to contribute, really starting from mitigation, adaptation, and then getting insurance, providing good insurance, reinsurance, and then starting to think for the tail risk about public-private partnership solutions, both financially, but definitely also incentivizing citizens and cities to adapt and mitigate. The second report is really about how that would look at a European level, this fifth step, mm-hmm. a European scheme. Mm-hmm. But I always stress that this is the final step and that you really need to go through the first four before you get there. So this is, I think, just a few examples. Mm-hmm. Now, how can we do that properly? That's because we have a lot of data. We do a lot of data analysis. We do a lot of modeling. And there we work together not only with the 27 member states in the European Union, but also internationally, because we have different experiences. Mm-hmm. So Japan is good at earthquake modeling, the United States very much in hurricane modeling. We know a lot about forest fires. For everything, floods is still difficult. It's the least insured peril in the European Union as well. But working together as supervisors, learning how to collect the data, do the data analysis, but also the modeling, I think is a way that we can inform that debate.
That's very interesting to share information and to get in collective knowledge,
yeah,
I would say.
It is. And I think that is one of the, in a way, one of the key functions and reasons to be of IOPA, mm-hmm. that we really bring together at our table 27 national competent authorities. That's a big difference with the ECB, that the ECB is the authority. In IOPA, there are 27 authorities, but they need to work together. And definitely for these new risks, for technology, for sustainability, they want to work together. And it's a very positive way of learning and supervising jointly.
No, very interesting. Thank you. We talk about regulation, but measuring the impact of regulation is important. How does IOPA assess the effectiveness of its rules, and how do you use the results to improve supervision and regulation?
Yeah, so what IOPA always does when we make any rule is first of all, decide whether or not we want to. Now, there's a whole set of rules that we have to do, because they're the Commission, the European Union, together the institutions, so Parliament, Council, they decide on a piece of legislation. And in that legislation, they create a mandate. So for IOPA, so they say IOPA should develop regulatory standards, or IOPA should develop guidelines, or they ask us a question to do something. That is one way. There we just have to deliver. And then there's another way where we ourselves feel a need to develop something, and that is when we are asked by industry, for example, that says, Petra, this is a single market, IOPA, this is a single market, but we see different practices. And I think that is always good that they ask, can we come with to an opinion or a supervisory statement? that actually addresses the fact that we have something very technical that needs explanation, or we need convergence because we do things in a different way. In both cases, the bottom line really is that if we start drafting, it is because we need to contribute to level playing field and convergence, or it is so technical that it's good that we do that. Those are the two reasons to start drafting. And then when we do that, we will always consult, and we also will do it with an impact assessment. Can we do better? I think going forward, impact assessment, particularly quantitative impact assessment, can be done even more. I think that is it when we do it, so that we really understand better. Going back and see how it worked is very relevant. And we're actually doing that now in the Solvency II review. I know that there is now this agenda of simplification, but before it was there, we in EIOPA already decided that we wanted to somehow reduce 20% of Solvency II in the review, simply because 7 years later, after the start, we felt that that would be possible. But another thing that is important and would be helpful is that we are consulted if EU starts to give mandates to EIOPA. Some mandates are mandates that are created because the political debate is difficult. We need to reach a decision. So part of the decision we leave out and we just ask EIOPA to figure it out. And that is not helpful, because if it's really a political decision, then we can also not solve that at the technical level. So here, I think we also can improve as an EU as a whole, to really ask ourselves, do we need to give EIOPA that mandate, or can we actually reach a conclusion and a decision in Brussels and be done with it?
Perfect. Let me think about another question, and how can the insurance industry better meet its social responsibilities? I mean, especially when it comes to pensions and sustainable products.
Yeah, now let me start with saying that I think that the European insurance industry is very much serving society and managing the risks of society as it is. So, but there's always, you know, good to think about what can we do more. And where we see that they can do more is really continue to think about value for money. Mm-hmm. And value for money means that the price that a consumer pays for a product is a true reflection of the services that person got, the costs that the insurer made, and the returns that are promised. And if we do an assessment as EIOPA of products, for example, EBIPs, which are insurance-based investment products and with which you can save for later, there we still see a significant percentage of products that really do not give a good return. And so people save, they think they're getting ready for a retirement. But if we look at the reduction in yield of those products, we can only conclude that these do not bring the return that is necessary to beat inflation, to be ready for retirement. Now, that is not all the products, but it's still a percentage that we think is too high, and as around 15%, and that needs attention. Now, here, of course, conduct supervision is important, but also industry. On sustainability, I think, again, there will be more asked for sustainable products. Here I always say, if it's green, it's green, and you should tell it. If you're not sure, then you don't have to say it's green. But please be honest about what you know and what you don't know. The reality about sustainable products is that you need to base it on information that maybe is not available, or is available but is not that certain yet. I think consumers can better understand someone that says, well, we're aiming for sustainability. We think this would be good, or this is a transition product, but we also are, we need to monitor this going forward. And then you monitor it. Why? If you get that wrong, then the trust will go. So I think when it comes to simple products that are value for money and that deliver on the sustainable ability promise that is in there, if there is any promise, I think that is essential. Yes. Now, what can we do as supervisors there? We did a mystery shopping exercise in EU. So we had people shopping for products and doing an analysis. It's still on a huge sample, but it gives, so it's not like, it's not the truth what came out of that exercise, but it gives some signals. And for me, what was an important signal was not the fact that there is still a certain percentage of products that need attention. We knew that already. It just mm-hmm. confirmed that. Now, what for me was really interesting is that what we saw is that brokers and intermediaries, insurance salespeople that sell a product, if they go through the entire process that they need to follow and to be compliant, they do not necessarily sell the right product to the person. And whereas if people do not follow the full process, they could still end up selling a good product to the person. Mm-hmm. And so there seems to be a bit of a detach between a very intensive process and the outcome. And in the context of burden reduction, we have now committed to look at that process and everything that is required and see if we can simplify that mm-hmm. because we feel that might actually lead to better outcomes and it would also reduce the burden on industry mm-hmm. and consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. But let's think about the European single market offers many opportunities, but some potential is still unused. In your view, what regulatory or structural barriers need to be overcome so insurers can be more innovative and competitive across Europe? You have an idea?
Well, I think this is the big question we're asking ourselves. I mean, we have a single market. Mm-hmm. We have 450 million consumers in that market. We've taken away a lot of barriers, yet I think there are also still a lot of barriers in place. And here we need to think of collectively what we can do. What we can do for sure on the side of supervisors is see how we can simplify and reduce burden. Yeah, be mindful of risk, but not block innovation, etc. The fact that you can get one license and operate in 27 countries, I think, is great. So, but what else needs to happen? And here, I really think that anyone needs to ask him or herself, are we competing with 27 among each other, or are we competing with 27 jointly in the world? Mm-hmm. And what you see in reality is that it's still often the first. Mm-hmm. So at high level, everyone agrees we compete mm-hmm. in the world. But when you get to the nitty gritty, it means that if one has the license and sells everywhere, it means all the others don't have that license and don't have that company. Mm-hmm. And what do you think of that? If you have savings that you want to scale at an EU level so that, hey, if it's pension money or savings products, that you want to scale so that you can use that capital to invest in the transition that Europe needs to go through. Yeah, then who has the capital? Who's running the assets? Do we feel comfortable with that? And if that is about pensions, then I think for also all very understandable reasons, people like that to still be very close to their country because it's their pension. Yeah. And that is very important. So I think in the end, that burden reduction, simplification, but also reviewing solvency too. And again, that should not be resulting in just a reduction in capital requirements bluntly. I do not think that helps the industry. That puts too much risk mm-hmm. in the system. Mm-hmm. But some capital reduction for the long-term investments, I could see that happen. And I could still see that is to a certain extent appropriate. I see simplification and burden reduction. I think those two relatively are not the most difficult mm-hmm. ones to achieve in the end. But the question then is, what if we have that on the 30th of January 2027, because mm-hmm. that's where Solvency II review kicks in. Let's say we have it. Mm-hmm. And then what? Then what is going to make us competitive? What is going to really further build this single market? I think this is a question that I'm much more focused on today mm-hmm. And what needs to happen in a safe way. And it's constantly striking the balance between protection on the one hand, but also enabling risk-taking, convincing people, consumers, that part of the savings in their bank account is actually put much more better to use in an investment product because it will give a better return and with that a better pension, even though it feels a bit risky. So you cannot avoid all the risks, no risks, no returns. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the talk we need to have in Europe. We have started that. So I do hope that we move quickly through, I think, a year of a lot of regulatory change. If you ask me, and I've been quoted recently that I said all my legislation is up in the air, but to a certain extent, that's true. Mm-hmm. Solvency II is reviewed. IOP 2 will be reviewed, PEP will be reviewed. We're still implementing the AI Act and DORA. VIDA is on its way. The Omnibus 2 Directive of all the sustainability is on its way. And it's all happening this year. Mm-hmm. So my policy people are quite busy. Yeah. But I would say let's get there. Let's get it done. Let's start to implement. But then let's think beyond that. Like, what do we need to do to make sure that we have a strong industry that has capital that can support the European economy? Because ultimately, we are in a supporting role to make that competitiveness happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we talk just Europe, and I just want to ask you, how does IOPA work with supervisors outside the EU? And what is your role internationally, for example, in setting global standards? I mean, to work closer together. You mentioned Japan, for example. Can you say something?
Sure. Yeah, so it's very much a role also of IOPA to be the voice of Europe together with our colleagues and on behalf of our EU colleagues in international fora. And so there's two ways we do this. We do it bilaterally, and then we focus on the markets that are most important to us. So that's the United Kingdom, Switzerland, but also the United States, Bermuda, Japan, Morocco to a certain extent. Mm. So those are countries that we work with. Moreover, bilaterally also, we of course work closely and reach out to the colleagues in the Western Balkan, in Ukraine, in Georgia. So the countries who have an ambition to get closer to Europe. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And we do that, I think, with a lot of interest, but also a lot of care, definitely also to the wider European community of supervisors. The second thing we do is that we're very active in the IAIS, that's the Basel Committee for Insurance, and it stands for International Association of Insurance Supervisors. Mm-hmm. I'm currently the vice chair there, and there we really have a dialogue at the international level on all the topics we just discussed. So we had a big success last year, December, when we set a capital standard for capital requirements. The ICS, very close to Solvency II. And so we're very happy with that. Now, that is now there. We need to further develop how we implement that. We're working on that. That's a tough discussion because everyone comes from a practice that they have. So it took years, but we reached that. But definitely also on protection gaps for climate, we have a lot of work, and IOPA is chairing that. And also I myself chair the FinTech Forum, and that's where we exchange AI and how do we deal with AI. What you see in that context is, again, it's the sharing of the practices, but the value is, of course, enormous because you talk to Asian colleagues, colleagues from India, but also from the US and UK, and they all see developments in their markets that we then share with each other, and that really helps us to inform also what we need to do in Europe to stay on it, given that these are new topics.
Mm, absolutely. We are just coming almost to the end, and I want to look a little bit to the future. Looking to the future, what do you see as the two most important regulatory trends or challenges for the insurance sector, especially regarding digitalization, new risks, etc.?
Yeah, so I think if you look forward, and if you really believe in the savings and investment union, because I'll start from that, and you believe in that in a world that is currently with all the geopolitical and geoeconomic tensions there from wars and tariffs, etc. Yeah, just providing a lot of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So you have a more uncertain world. You need to build Europe. You believe in the Savings and Investment Union. That means you're going to really also tell people to consider to stop saving all their money in bank accounts, but just also invest and become retail investors in order to not only generate capital for the EU, but also really to provide for a good pension. Mm. One in five Europeans is at risk of living in poverty in retirement. That's a ridiculous high number for our continent. So we really need to work on that. Now, what is the risk then that I see? The risk that I see is that at the same time, there is this call for simplification, burden reduction that can tend to deregulation and to really reducing capital requirements beyond what is economically valid and just for political reasons. And that will be a mistake because the world is uncertain, and in uncertain worlds, numbers can look great, but in the end, you need capital if there's trouble. And if you don't have it, you will lose the trust. You will lose trust of consumers. And with that, they will put their money back into the bank accounts.
Absolutely.
And it won't work. So the challenge going forward will be, how do you balance the political risks and the technology that comes in a right way that you facilitate still a change in risk appetite in the EU that benefits us without overstepping it and debalancing what we really need, and that's in the end is good outcomes for consumers, good management of society's risks, so that there's trust in the financial system, because in the end, that trust will be key in the uncertainty that we have today.
Absolutely. Petra, thank you. But the last question, if you could make one wish, there's only one wish, to European policymakers, what change would you suggest to be best support the competitiveness and innovation of the insurance industry?
Yeah, so I think my wish would be I think I would have said a year ago or even half a year ago, I would have said, don't rush everything at the same time. Allow for consultation so you can really listen to industry needs. Do an impact assessment that you really understand what you are doing and dare to take decisions already in Brussels. And with that, you will end up with legislation that's more simple and hopefully with less lower legislation. And that has an impact that you saw coming because you tested it. Now, that's not entirely fair because I just said that everything is up in the air and because we also want to move swift and create this basis for the market. So what I would say is I hope that we can get through these policy adjustments by the end of the year or in the latest in the beginning of 2026. But then we should really start focusing on implementation and making it work. So I think that is a first. Don't overdo it if you look at policymakers. And at the same time, don't also already now, don't overdo it when it comes to capital. So my second wish is, we are more than 15 years after a crisis. And they always say that it takes 10 to 15 years to forget about a crisis. And there is not really a crisis happening today in a big four. But it's a very uncertain world. There's a lot of volatility. And so don't forget all those lessons. Don't break down what we build up, because what we build up actually got us through low inflation. It got us through Corona. It got us through a war in Ukraine. And there will be different crises coming that we need to get through. So don't overdo it on the deregulation side. Let's get things done. We stand ready and in a very positive way to simplify, reduce burden and do that quickly. But then after that, let's create some stability so that this industry can flourish and while flourishing also support the economy in the EU to really become more competitive.
This is a great wish, Petra. Petra, thank you to be my guest at Frankfurt Regulierung Podcast.